It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
I hate him. He's cuckoo for copal cuffs.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, or you want to pledge, no, not just yet. If you have a question or a comment, though, you can go to msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on the Twitter, at Matthew Soze.
The Twitter,
you darn kids. And, the show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. We also have a blog, which is up and coming. It's rising like a phoenix. Not the city of Phoenix, and not the Suns, or Diamondbacks. But anyway, it is available for you to look at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
One of the hardest working men in public radio, this guy right here, Kobe Slagle.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And good afternoon, Sunday listeners.
That's right. We're working ahead because you hear this show twice now on 4
Sunday,
o'clock.
Yep,
Sundays 4 o'clock. At 4. Or be prepared because someday, sometime, somewhere down the road, we might do a whole new show on a Sunday afternoon.
We might do a new show on a Sunday afternoon and give a cool prize to whoever can email Matt and identify when the second show was.
That's true.
We might do that.
So be listening. Be careful. Check in. It's always good to check in on HD2 over the weekend. You leave it a little, leave it some food, a little water. You know, make sure
it's okay.
Sandbox is cleaned out.
Yep.
You know, like the Hansbro brothers. And it's pledge time. It is pledge time here at WFYI. So if you call 1-800-233-0020 or go to WFYI.org so you can support public radio goodness on HD1 and HD2. And normally around this time, Kobe has this lie incentive going on.
Well, you kind of took the ropes here. I was wondering if you were going to pull out some lie that you wanted to...
Oh, no, you created the lie first, so...
you were the first liar.
You were the first liar, so I will say, if you show a pledge of support at 1-800-233-0020 or...
In any amount.
Or WFYI.org, in any amount, and you say you heard this on Film Sociology...
If you put in the comments of why you give that Kobe Slagle is...
Cool. You said cooler.
The first one was cooler. Then it grew to cooler and better looking. And
that's a real lie.
Let's. Kobe Slagle is cooler and better looking, and
for God's sake, really?
Another nice adjective of your choice in the comments of why you give. We will take you out
to lunch. We'll go to Yats.
We'll see our friend Joe.
It's not true. You know, what you write is a lie, but we'll take you to lunch anyway.
It's not a lie at all.
Now, one stipulation. You cannot be named Bianca if you pledge this. You are... Better halves of Film Sociology are not eligible and sold separately.
However, what if Emma... pledged.
Oh, God. No, family members of Film Sociology.
Family members and better halves are excluded from this promotion.
So sorry. Jeez.
So there you have it. To wrap it up, make a pledge in any amount at 1-800-233-0020 or online at WFYI.org. And in the comments, write why you give. Kobe Slagle is cooler, better looking, and then a nice adjective of your choice. And we will take you to lunch.
Yes. I got some adjectives for you, Mister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mister
Man. Okay. So it's been a very busy week, and It's our Heartland Festival, our Heartland Film Festival preview, which we'll get to in a little bit. And I, full disclosure, it's been kind of crazy here at WFYI. So I've been on the board. Kobe's been here since the mornings. You handle the morning shift.
Yep.
You have to deal with Scott Hoke
every
and then
day.
And then Matthew Soucy. You have to deal with both of them. In the same...
insufferable Matthew Soucy, who's proud that his
Detroit Tigers
going to the championship series.
They defeated Oakland last night. No more West Coast games. Old man's very tired from having to watch baseball until 1 o'clock in the morning. Just waiting on the Orioles and Yankees to decide who's going to be defeated by Detroit. I'm wearing the Tiger jersey with pride. And speaking of pride, tonight, 7:30. If you get a chance, if you are, for whatever reason, this weekend or next weekend, if you are on the eastern part of the state, especially in the Richmond area, run over to Richmond Civic Theater tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m., 2 p.m. on Sunday, and then next Friday and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Yeah, matinee. 7:30 p.m. next Friday and Saturday night, you can see Richmond Civic Theater's production of Wait Until Dark, a fine theatrical thriller, and one of the actors in this production is kids film correspondent Emma Soucy. Why don't you turn the mic on and tell people?
I want to say I have seen this. I think
the
movie
was Audrey Hepburn and Alan Arkin.
I think
you saw a play version of this.
I think so.
It's semi freaky. I'm impressed.
I've totally forgotten since.
I think you and Fair Sweet Bianca should road trip to Richmond and go check it out.
We could get some square donuts.
Oh, there's your ulterior motive, is to go get the square donuts.
We like to get the square donuts in the Richmond.
So anyway, that's going on. So break a leg, Emma. I'll be there as soon as the show's over. But Kobe, we're gonna mix things around a little bit. Ooh. Normally when we do what is Kobe watching, it's usually a movie that I've thrust upon him.
Yep.
He's a little lacking in that. But
I know. And I said last week that this being Pledge Drive week that and me leaving early, I was gonna go home and watch some movies, but that has not happened.
However,
yes,
you did see a film that opened in theaters. This is a continuing Kobe financially saving Hollywood.
Yeah, this is
we're rolling that over from last year.
This year has been a big year for me saving Hollywood, and I'd say at this point I've probably done more for Hollywood this year than I did last year.
And you've done more than the people who made Battleship. So
yes,
You. My friend saw Frankenweenie, the latest Tim Burton animated feature based on a Tim Burton animated short, now expanded into a full length. And it's, of course, a young man whose dog dies and he brings the dog back to life in a Frankenstein sense of the word.
Yes.
Sir, your thoughts?
I liked it. It being Tim Burton and all the...
You lump him in the freaky department, don't you?
Yeah, all the as he fills up his Haterade mug.
He's talking about me, not Tim Burton. Tim Burton does not have a Haterade mug.
He might. You never know.
Okay, fine.
But I don't, being a Tim Burton movie and the trailers that you see or that you've been seeing on TV and in theaters for the last 3 months, it seems like.
Right.
I thought it was going to be a lot more
insufferable
and freaky and dark and scary, and it wasn't really scary at all. I liked it. I'm a fan. And that's like the second Halloween kids movie that we've seen consecutive weeks.
And what was the other one?
Hotel Transylvania.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Not Hotel South California.
No, not. But we did see the Gypsy Kings, and they did play that a month ago.
They did do Hotel California.
It was awesome.
Was it 15 minutes long? It should have been.
Yeah, man.
And ladies and gentlemen, for the record, their version of Hotel California, superior.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. Moving on.
No questions asked.
No yacht rock. All right, so good. So you and Fair Sweet Bianca enjoyed Frankenweenie as well?
Love Frankenweenie.
Okay, so when are you going to watch Ed Wood?
I don't know.
We'll have to work on that.
Yeah.
It is October. So, well, Kobe, give a response then.
I get to pick my own response.
Yes, you get to pick your own response.
Crap, I got the wrong folder open.
Oh, you're
here.
An idiot.
See, that's the thing. I got so many
folders.
This show leads the league not only in show IDs, but sound clips in general. We have so many responses.
We got to work on the film sociology box set. the app.
Yes. All of our audio on one mobile app.
Oh, that's terrifying.
That
that's
would
a terrifying
be so cool.
thought. So do you got one? Here's what I'll set you up, ready? This is what we normally do on the show. Yeah. Oh wait, we are doing the show. So this is what Kobe Slagle thinks of Tim Burton's Frankenweenie.
Wow, that'd be some good filming there, Mr. Sosi.
Except you're Mr. Slagle. Okay, let's do it. Play it again. We'll try it again. Ready?
Wow, that'd be some good filming there, Mr.
Slagle.
There you go.
So, all right.
Teamwork on that one.
Yeah. What's going to work? Teamwork.
Teamwork.
Thank you,
There's
Wonder
no
Pets.
There's no I in team.
Except for that one drawing that's been on Facebook for quite a while.
But there is a me, so.
Yeah, okay. All right, so opening in theaters this weekend, we have Here Comes the Boom. You know, is that Kevin James film where he falls down? Yep.
And he's going out with Selma Hayek somehow?
Okay, so I have to... I give Mr. Slagle grief over Diana Krall and Elvis Costello, Padma Lakshmi and Salman Rushdie, Lynn Perkins and myself. But, yeah, it's... And by the way, she was somehow previously cinematically married to Adam Sandler Grown Ups.
Yeah.
Yeah, not... Because it was... And Kevin James was with Maria Bello, and Chris Rock was with Maya Rudolph. So I guess it'd be nice to make movies with Adam Sandler so we could have such... Anyway, yeah. I'm not going to finish that. Let's move on. Atlas Shrugged 2.
Speaking of Adam Sandler, Winona Ryder was in Frankenweenie.
The Voice.
Yep.
As was Martin Landau, Martin Short, Catherine O'Hara.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Landau rules in Ed Wood. That's the other reason why you need to watch Ed Wood. But it's not freaky.
Is it a thriller? Is it a psychological thriller?
It's a biopic.
Because that means it's freaky.
It's not freaky. It's a biopic. Atlas Shrugged 2 opened today. Let's move on.
Still shrugging.
And Argo. Big, big buzz about the new film starring and directed by Ben Affleck based on the events of rescuing six Americans from Tehran during the hostage crisis in 1979. Ben Affleck, John Goodman, Alan Arkin, Brian Cranston. So hopefully we'll have a report on that next week. But Heartland Film Festival starts up on October 18th and runs through the 27th. And I'm going to be doing some more interviews next Thursday and Friday at the Canterbury Hotel. If you get a chance, come on out to the Canterbury from 11:30 to 1, both days. I'll be there conducting interviews with some of the filmmakers. And I was able to talk to three filmmakers, and we're going to play those interviews now. We had shorter, condensed versions of these interviews on Morning Edition, but we have for you three interviews with three of the films that you can check out at the Heartland Film Festival. Of course, you go to heartlandfilmfestival.org for the dates and the times and all that. We're going to start things off with a film called Free Samples, and this stars Jess Wexler. This was a young lady from a film. Well, she did a horror movie simply called Teeth, and I can't tell you the storyline because, well, it's a grown-up movie and it involves teeth in a certain area. And Kobe's grinning, so I'm just going to leave it at that. But she's in this as well as Jesse Eisenberg, Jason Ritter, and Tippi Hedren. And it's a story of...
Oh, Tippi Hedren.
Tippi Hedren from The Birds.
Yep.
So, and Melanie Griffith's mom. But this Jess plays a woman who is filling in for her best friend at her job. She gives out free samples on a rickety old ice cream truck, and she runs into lots of eccentric characters and has some life crossroad issues at the time. So I talked with Jay Gamble, who is the producer on this film. Here's my chat about the film Free Samples. So Jay, how did the script come over to your world?
Yeah, so I met screenwriter Jim Beggarly coming out of USC grad school a number of years ago, but he, you know, we were trying to figure out something to work on, and I was trying to make first feature, and so he pitched me on the idea of Free Samples, and I just absolutely loved it. And then he wrote it, and then probably within about 2 months, so that was kind of cool to see how fast that he did that. And then we kind of took it around after that and trying to get it made and getting, you know, interesting talent and that sort of thing. So that's kind of where it came from.
So you were with the project from the very beginning?
Yes, I was.
Okay, so for those who don't know, because it hasn't played in Indianapolis yet, tell everybody what Free Samples is all about.
Sure. So, yeah, Free Samples is an indie comedy about a girl who runs an ice cream truck for a day on the streets of Los Angeles. And so it's about her kind of misadventures and dealing with crazy customers and kind of, you know, she's at a very low point in her life. So it kind of follows her throughout that day.
Now, have you ever had a job like this?
I haven't had a job like that. I've definitely had jobs that I was, overqualified for. So I think on that level, I could relate to it, relate to the job side of it. If everybody around you seems insane or ignorant, then it feels you feel like an outsider, and it's very frustrating.
So which reporter am I? Which number reporter am I that makes reference to the film Clerks?
You know, you're probably number 73. I don't know.
I was hoping for low 60s, but
low 60s. Yeah, there's a few people that kind of got ahead of you. Clerks is a great comparison. I'm a fan of that film. I think I was trying to, there's certainly that element of it, all these like little vignettes, I think it was always a struggle to be a little bit different and try to make it a little bit more cohesive throughout for the story. But I love Clerks.
I will say this film has less colorful language and more tippy-hedron compared to Clerks.
Right. I think that's a very fair analysis.
And an Academy Award nominated actor. Tell us a little bit about getting Jesse Eisenberg involved.
Yeah, we were very, very fortunate to have him on the project. He was somebody that I think originally he was involved with another project of our screenwriter back in, I think, 2008. And then, that project never came to fruition, but through that, relationship, he had free samples and said, yeah, I would do like a small part in that. And so, and I, at that time, I was like ecstatic because I was such a huge fan of his. And then his career kind of really blossomed. And so we were very fortunate even after that, that he would come back and still do it with us. So, we were very lucky. And I think, he really liked the script. He liked the character of Tex that he plays. So it's also a nice change to see him in that role.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're used to him kind of being, people have compared him to Michael Cera or the second coming of Woody Allen when it comes to Stammer Log. But between Social Network and a film like this, he's been able to go in a different direction.
Yeah, he's got such a wide range, and it's just like, very little direction that I actually even had to give him on that. That's just what he brought to it.
I have to be a film nerd and ask about working with Tippi Hedren since I've been watching, yeah, literally growing up watching her.
Right. And I did too. I mean, that was like, that was also another dream come true. number five, I think, on the list. But it's probably a little higher. I was always trying to find somebody for the role that she played. And, if you don't know, like her role is, the character is like a B-movie actress who was very, prolific earlier in her life. And so I just wanted somebody that maybe could kind of fill those shoes. And so even though Tippi was like a movie star, we had a lot of trouble casting that role and, taking it out to people that were around and working. We were kind of like very, it was very late in the, pre-production process, and so we had, a few people had fallen through, and our producer, he says to me, like, "Hey, who is your dream person for this role?" And I was like, "Well, Tippi Hedren," and that's really how it went. And so he's like, "Well, all right, let's try it." And so we reached out to her agent, and then Tippi lives up like an hour outside of LA. And so her agent drove up the script to her that day and so Tippi read it and she, loved it. So yeah, I mean, it was just, I'm still pinching myself.
not too hard.
With
all this mentioned, really the film is carried by Jess, who does a really, really good job in it. And I'm surprised in the ad campaign, it doesn't feature From the Star of Teeth.
Yeah, that's kind of her breakout role, isn't it? I feel like she's just so talented. She did a great job, and that's also like someone who we wanted for that role from the get-go, and she, responded to the script. So you know, I'm really happy that she took it on. She owns it. She owns that role.
I mean, it was, yeah, you're right about capturing the low point and trying to just continue and even be skeptical when somebody like Tex comes up and just flat out asks her and, with no BS involved.
Well, it was funny because that's how, you know, I didn't, you know, have many interactions with her, like, before that. I mean, we talked, you know, several times, but, like, I kind of came to know Jess as Jillian, but that's not who she is at all. She's, like, the nicest person ever and, like, so considerate, and it's just, like, it was funny to, like, have that realization just myself, that how much she was, like, becoming that character for the role.
How many trucks did it take for you to make this?
How many trucks?
How hard was it to find the truck for the film?
Oh, yeah, that was hard. Our main location where most of the film takes place and the truck, which is kind of like, you know, another character, those were huge question marks that we were trying to figure out. And so, like, I think most, you know, so much of our pre-production time just went into, like, trying to find an ice cream truck. And then we were like, well, let's buy an old one that's already, like, outfitted. And that was, like, its own sort of problem because they're not around or they're too expensive for what we could afford. And then we try to rent one, you know, but like the ones that are like the food truck sort of craze that here in LA, it's like, they're really nice. They're really nice food trucks. And we didn't want that. We wanted something really crappy and sort of, you know, run down. And so we ended up like through that sort of process, we found the company that kind of retrofits all these, you know, trucks for food trucks, mm-hmm. become food trucks. And so they had an old truck. And we just bought that and cut a hole in it. There was no hole, no nothing. And then we painted it and took it from there. So, yeah. It was his own beast. It broke down a few times and wouldn't start. Our producer got stuck on the freeway with it. Wasn't the best truck we could have gotten. I think we kind of, you know, bought the truck we wanted, a rundown truck.
Right. And I think from a filmmaking standpoint, it was smart that it only has to move that in that one sequence.
Yeah. And that's a great little, like, reveal moment where she's kind of just driving it back and forth just to keep it moving.
So did you take it out back and shoot it when filming was over?
I definitely know that our producers took it out back and shot it. But then, like, a couple months later, we were finding we wanted some, like, driving shots and, you know, as we were just, like, in editing. And so we went back and We don't have the truck anymore, but we found where it is, where it was, or where we, you know, who we sold it to or whoever. And they're like, yeah, well, I'll drive it around and you can film the truck. So that's what we did. But that was kind of funny.
You've ever been on one end or the other of the counter when it comes to customer service? I know free samples will be able to touch a nerve in a good way with some people. Hopefully everybody.
Yeah. I'm hoping so too. So yeah.
Well, hello there. My name is Zamantee Tombstone from the Svengoolit program on MeTV, and I wanted to advise you that you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. I flunked sociology, so good luck.
Thank you, Tombstone. By the way, speaking of Svengoolit, tomorrow night on MeTV, depending on where you get your cable at, they're showing...
Bless you, sir.
Well, there's an unintentional soundbite for the end of the year show, no one then. You got that.
Yeah, I got that. I could have muted that. But,
no, you didn't.
No.
Because we might need it for something.
Maybe.
You just never know.
You know what? If we have it, if we need it, we have it.
Yep, and now we do.
Yep.
So, there's... No, it was early in my music writing career. I was leaving him. It was Alligator Records, the very fine blues label out of Chicago. And I was leaving a message, and just like what you just, I sneezed halfway through the message. And the person who I made contact with then forwarded it to every single person in the office. So the following summer, when I met the president of the record label, he goes, "Oh, you're the sneeze guy."
Yeah.
So now we have a sneeze. So
you were that guy.
Anyway, as I was saying before, I love when people call me even though they know I'm in the air. At least I hope so. On Svengoolit, tomorrow night, 10 o'clock on MeTV, the 1966 film version, of Batman.
Mm.
That's right. The original campy. Yep. Adam and Bert, and there's Cesar Romero and Lee Merriweather. Lee Merriweather plays Catwoman in this one, Burgess Meredith as well. So that's on MeTV with Svengoolie. So we heard a preview of the film Free Samples, which is fun. Yes, there's a little, you could say it's very Clerks-like because of somebody being stuck at a dead-end job and their life is kind of going nowhere. But nice performances by the cast. Now we're going to move on to a drama called Future Weather. And the stars, the names that you know, Amy Madigan, Lily Taylor, William Sadler, and the star of this is a precocious young 13-year-old girl named Perla Haney Jardine. And I had to look and see where I knew her from, because she's played daughters and she's played kids in other movies like Untraceable. But she was BB Kiddo in Kill Bill Volume 2.
Mm.
So there's it's that kid. Anyway, I got to talk to the writer, and that's right, that guy, that girl, that kid. I got to talk to writer and director Jenny Deller about her film at Heartland, Future Weather. Where did the inspiration for this film come from?
Yeah, I came from a lot of different places. I had just turned 30 when I started writing it, and it was kind of at a crossroads and trying to figure out, did I, you know, want to have kids down the line? Did I want to pursue my career and as a filmmaker? And, you know, what came out was a story, I think, that encompasses all of those things and those various conflicts for women. And I wanted to set a story in Southern Illinois, which is where I grew up, and I just had a kind of a lot of rich characters that I knew and stories that, you know, I heard from other people, and it was just an environment that I wanted to capture on film. So that's part of where the story came from.
So for those because it hasn't opened yet in Indy and we're waiting for it at the festival, tell us a little bit about Future Weather.
Well, it's a story of three generations of women in a rural town, small rural town. It could be really anywhere in the country. And at the center of the story is this pretty plucky 13-year-old girl who loves to play outside and is really interested in biology and very independent kid. And when her mom runs away from home, she is faced with how to survive on her own.
Now, since you wrote and directed this, we have to ask, this isn't autobiographical, we hope.
No, it's not. Okay. As I said, it's you know, it's set in and around an area I grew up in, and you know, incorporates a few small kind of geographical details, but it's also very personal in other ways, you know. I did not live through these events, but I certainly drew on relationships in my own life.
And your knowledge of science.
Yeah. I actually went to a math and science high school in Aurora, Illinois. It's called the Illinois Math and Science Academy. And I've always had a love for science and just wanted to get at really how creative science is and that it can just come from, you know, impulse to know more about the world.
One of the things intriguing about that, the character joins a very small science club, but the knowledge of the projects that they do and what they want to do with them is a lot more than your average teenage show in which somebody says they're either in a club or in the band and there's very little point to it whatsoever.
Yeah, I did a lot of research. I wanted to come up with a science project that a 13-year-old kid would come up with on their own, and I wanted it to be really relevant to the topic of climate change, which our heroine becomes really obsessed with when her mom runs away from home. So I did a lot of research on, you know, a concept called carbon sequestration, and it seemed to fit in perfectly with the concept of photosynthesis, which I think most school kids, you know about.
Now, where in Southern Illinois did you film this?
Well, that's the funny part of the film is we actually shot it in the Philadelphia region, which is where I had been living at the time and where I developed the film. So we found, you know, we were just really, really nitpicky about locations, and everything had to really feel right to kind of get that Heartland feeling.
Well, mission accomplished on that part.
Thanks.
And also the fact that you have this is a film in which you have a teenage girl as the girl, you know, the star, the one who carries the film, who not only holds her own, but she gets to share screen time with the likes of Lily Taylor and William Sadler and Amy Madigan. How was it filming those moments?
Oh, my God, a dream. I mean, this is my first film, and I love actors, and I just consider myself really blessed that I got to be able to work with such an accomplished cast. And Amy Madigan and Bill and Lily are all incredibly generous, both to me as a first-time filmmaker and also to Perla. And, you know, there was just a really great spirit on set, and I think Perla loves working with actors too, so she likes to feel a kind of family vibe, and it just all gelled really well.
It was cool to look up her page and realize that I've seen her in about four or five pictures. How did you get in touch with Perla?
We were in touch with her agent about another role in the film, and he said, you know, I have a perfect actor for the role of Lottery. And at first we thought, oh no, this guy's going to try to package our film for us and, you know, interfere. And we said, well, you know, send us her reel. And we got it and saw the most amazing footage of her in this Michael Winterbottom film called Summer in Geneva. And she was probably 9 or 10 at the time. And she's acting with Colin Firth and Catherine Keener and totally carried that film too. So we knew we had a kid with chops.
With the likes of Amy Madigan and Bill William Sadler and Lily Taylor, how many days did you have with each of them?
Not very many. You know, we had a lot more than an independent film usually has because we were working with a minor. Perla was 13 when we shot, so, you know, we only had her on set for a limited amount of time. But, you know, I think we had about, you know, maybe 2 days with Bill and 4 or 5 days with Amy.
As a first-time filmmaker, what did you learn the most?
Wow. I think, you know, I learned that it's just really important to be true to your vision and listen to your gut. And there's a lot of people on set and a lot of opinions, and it's really high pressure. And it can feel very tempting to kind of, you know, let things go because you need to move on or, you know, because so-and-so is an expert and then telling you. But I found that when I really stuck to my guns, I ended up being really happy with the results.
That's Jenny Deller, the writer and director of Future Weather, which is going to be running at this year's Heartland Film Festival, October 18th through the 27th. Go to heartlandfilmfestival.org for more information. Hey, Kobe, do we have the birthday man's ID?
I'm working on it here.
Okay, I'll set it up. We just checked, and you know, because we don't often do celebrity birthdays. I mean, we talk about dead people we like, mm-hmm. but this one is very special. This gentleman's birthday, I believe, is 87. But anytime we can get a former film sociology guest on the show, you know, as far as greatest hits, this is one of our all-time favorite show IDs, and we just want to say happy birthday to writing great Elmore Leonard.
Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
I love that man. That's just fantastic.
We're here. This is real.
Yep, we're real.
And we're living it.
All right, we got one more interview that you can hear. We're going to play for you. That is one of the films at Heartland Film Festival. You go to heartlandfilmfestival.org. Again, it's 18th through the 27th. And just a reminder, 1-800-233-0020. Go to WFYI.org. Pledge. Show your support to WFYI Radio, HD1 and HD2. Write some malarkey that that Kobe made you say, and we'll go to lunch at Yats.
It has malarkey. Already been 5 days of this.
Yes.
It has already been 5 days. Oh, and sorry if you're listening Sunday. It's already been seven days
of this. Well, it's... And you got it from, and we both experience it from two different perspectives, because you're producing and directing, and I'm on the board with the clock and occasionally pitching in from time to time. So we get through. We feel each other's pain in different ways. Okay, one more interview. This is a producer, Ron Nager, who produced the film I Am Not a Hipster. It's the Kobe Slagle story. And no, it's an independent feature, and here's my chat with Ron Nager. Now, you've had quite a bit of experience behind and in front of the camera, Ron. How did this script come to you?
Justin and I are
good friends. We've known each other for a long time. We actually met in film school, and we like always talked about doing a project together. And basically, he had this other project that he sort of was fast-tracking, and that kind of stalled. And we were developing I'm Not a Hipster together, and we just both really wanted to make something, so we decided to go ahead and go for it last year.
Now, since it hasn't come to Indianapolis just yet, tell us a little bit about what I Am Not a Hipster is about.
I'm Not a Hipster is about an indie musician who is dealing with the loss of his mother and sort of has found kind of a new community that he's hanging out with, and basically his family sort of interrupts his life and basically are coming to spread his mother's ashes. So it's sort of like him having to stop this new world he's created and deal with his family and his loss.
And even the new world he's created hasn't always had the best moments.
No, I mean, I think, look, for him, I think as an indie musician, he's doing really well, but I think internally he's pretty tormented with sort of how life is and how things are going for him. So it's sort of like, even though it might look good on the outside for him internally, he sort of has a lot that he's dealing with.
Well, one of the things that I enjoyed about the film, and we've seen this kind of character before, the tortured artist, but the two things that come to mind, you bring it up already, is one, the family comes to visit. He's the only boy with three sisters. And then there's a moment where he does a volunteer job at school, which kind of helps take away some of the, I guess, jerkiness that some people would see this character as.
That was very purposeful, I think, in terms of Destin wanting to give him sort of this redeeming quality, because actually that's very true. We felt like up until that point, you really weren't sure if you were going to like this guy. And I think when you see him with the kids, you realize like he does have a good heart. And even I think when his sisters come in, you realize you see sort of this other side of him. But I think him with the kids in that next scene sort of really hits home, where you realize like, hey, this guy's actually got a decent heart.
And that balances out stuff that people who've watched local music have seen before, the uncomfortable interviews, the when another musician shows up at another musician's show at their gig. You know, those who've seen these events know sometimes it doesn't always end well.
Right. And I think we have a few musician friends, and Justin's very much in that sort of world, so I think he's experienced it, and you know, a lot of our friends have experienced it, so I think Destin has a good ability to sort of, you know, I'm sure you've conducted a lot of these interviews, so I'm sure you've seen it go bad and go good. So.
Not quite like Billy Bob Thornton bad, but I've heard them. Fortunately, I've not had one, knock on wood.
Okay. Well, hopefully, maybe I'll do that for you on this one.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate it. Now, how did you guys get Dominic involved? Because, I mean, obviously one of the crucial things was you had to have an actor who could actually sing and play as well.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a good question, actually. Destin has worked with Dominic on several of his short films and actually went to go see Dominic perform. I want to say it was Jersey Boys in Chicago, and I think when he saw that, and one of his good friends is also Joel P. West, who did all the music for the film. I think he sparked an idea in his head, like, this would be a very interesting pairing to put Dominic with Joel and sort of create this character. Sort of having, you know, knowing those two people sort of, I think, really informed the story.
I was curious about why it takes place in San Diego, and I wanted to also piggyback that with, can you help describe what the San Diego music scene is?
I think the main reason that Destin and myself wanted to do this movie in San Diego is we basically, Destin, for the last, prior to moving to L.A. the last couple of years, spent 10 years in San Diego going to undergrad and grad school there. I grew up in San Diego. San Diego is just a place that we both knew really well. Destin has a lot of friends who are musicians, so it just made sense to put it in that world and to honestly utilize a lot of the people in the San Diego indie music scene, and a lot of them actually are in the movie in various parts and help make the movie. So it's the San Diego music scene is very much a part of I'm Not a Hipster.
Can you describe what the music scene is like out there?
I mean, I think it's a very, music scene. I think there's a lot of different artists from, you know, there's hip-hop artists, there's indie rock artists, alternative artists. I think it's just a wide range of different types of music. I think the music that Destin gravitates more to is more probably indie folk, indie rock, kind of music that a lot of his friends are in different bands, sort of the community. I think there's a lot of different, you know, music going on in San Diego, a lot of good music.
What I liked about watching the moments in the music scene, because it does show some of the universalities of you know, there are moments that happen that could happen in San Diego, happen in Indianapolis or any other city, is the small circle of friends and people that you know. People have this image of the music industry where it's people in suits glad handing each other, and it's done here with, you know, t-shirts and jeans and how you present yourself at someone else's show, and you have a friend of yours that is quote unquote management.
Right, yeah. No, I mean, I think it's, you know, that's the thing. A lot of people, I think, ask us just, you know, during like going to different festivals, they're like, well, is this a very San Diego film? And I think Justin, you know, writing this. You know, he actually, I remember telling me a story about how he backpacked through Southeast Asia. A lot of the kids there were dressed similarly, had similar of an attitude, and were even listening to sort of indie music and stuff. So I think it's sort of a generational thing more than a specific location thing. And I think all of us in today's age where people are making music on their computers and are doing different things, it's very like handmade music and art. And so I think that goes across not just the country, but even like right now around the world.
Yeah, and that's something that's brought up in the film, is that conflict between do you record with a computer, or do you create with a computer, or do you just pick up a guitar and head to the street and do it there?
I think in terms of, are you talking about like the speech with Dominic?
Yes.
And with, yeah that's the one we get asked a few questions. But yeah, I think that's an interesting one because, you know, both characters sort of pick up and make something that's sort of like very raw. Like both the Dominic character and the Alvaro character both do it, but I think the point that the Brooke Hyde character was trying to make was some people are put all their heart and soul and creative energy into it, and some people are just doing it on the side, you know, and it's sort of like because of technology, everyone can do it now, but it sort of muddles up what's going on. It was probably that scene right there in particular of them on the porch is like my favorite scene.
For the last few years, that's sort of the thing that's been asked on what is celebrity, what is fame, is, you know,
right.
any yutz can do something online right now and get noticed.
It's absolutely insane, and it's a different, we're sort of in a different world kind of come about in the last 10 years, and you know, I think that's also something, to be totally honest with you, that Justin and I talked about when we were just talking about the movie. We're like, you know, we haven't seen that kind of like, I think like a movie like Slackers or something like that was like that generation, you know, or, you know what I mean? Like there was those movies for different generations and different groups of people. And I feel like, you know, we haven't really seen a movie talk to those, you know, talk to these things we're talking about right now sort of come out there. I'm sure there are, but there's nothing that we really gravitated to.
And the thing about Slackers, not everybody is that well-versed. I guess there's a reason why they've been saying mumblecore for the last few years.
Yeah, no, we talked about that because it's one of those things where, you know, I actually like really like the mumblecore films, but at the same time, I think Justin likes a little more structure. And so it was sort of, you know, wanting to make more, I think, not necessarily a mumble film, but in that same, with that same heart.
So now I'm curious, what are you working on now?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say, actually.
Okay, well, let me know how much you can say.
Well, it's a new feature, and it's something, it was actually the feature that Destin was supposed to make when we made Hipster. Sort of like about to go, but didn't happen, and then we turned around and made Hipster for next to no money, and this one is still pretty much on the low budget indie side.
And somehow it involves mountains, that's all I really know.
Shooting in secluded areas probably is more accurate.
All right, that is Ron Nager, the producer of I Am Not a Hipster. Before that, Jenny Deller, writer and director of Future Weather, and before that, Jay Jamel, of the producer of Free Samples. Three films that you can check out at this year's Heartland Film Festival, which is running October 18th through the 27th. You can go to heartlandfilmfestival.org for dates and times and screenings. We'll have more discussion about Heartland Films on next week's program. So we're going to take a short break, and then, home stretch. We'll have to talk about what's new and old on DVD and Blu-ray. We have Dead People We Like. We have Into the Archives. We just have a...
So much still to come.
And your pledge dollars at work right here, 1-800-233-0020 or WFYI.org. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Padma Lakshmi, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI FM radio.
Oh, hi, Padma.
Ah, you're just so jealous. You know what this means now, sir. You are going to have to get some show IDs for your show.
I need to start soliciting IDs and doing interviews.
You want to talk to beautiful chefs and their knowledge of Brazilian music? Hey, if I can have Food Network people come on and talk about cinema, you can get anybody to come in and talk about it would help if they had a knowledge of Brazilian music.
Yeah, see that saying, like, anybody can talk about movies. Everybody can talk about movies.
You know what you should do? Go on Facebook and say, hey, who's famous and knows a lot about Brazilian music? Anyway, but I say this because Kobe has a show, which you can hear
That's right.
Saturday nights at 7 o'clock.
Right here.
The Cool Down.
The Cool Down.
Not Cool Down.
Indies. Only Brazilian music show.
You check this.
Yes.
That's cool. You got it. The only.
The only. This week, it's a samba dance party. Oh, and if you're listening Sunday.
It was a samba
dance. It was awesome. It was a samba dance party last night, and you missed it.
And we're working on. You are working on an underwriter, and I still think you should talk to Chucho Valdez.
That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
You would phenomenal. You would be jealous.
I would be jealous. But no, I bet I could talk to him about films.
Yeah.
Like Cheeto and Rita and. Chico and Rita, isn't it? Oh, man, I messed that up. All right, let's move on to DVD and Blu-ray. Film Kobe Won't Watch is on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The much-anticipated, much-discussed, even today, Ridley Scott sci-fi thriller Prometheus.
I would see this.
You will?
I've seen Alien, and I like Alien. It's scary as hell. But I would see Prometheus.
Well, you should go rent it now. It's available on DVD and Blu-ray. And, of course, there's a lot of talk. Is it a prequel to Alien? Is it not a prequel to Alien? I guess I would say, of course, I'm older.
It's up for interpretation, man. Why can't it be both?
Right. Okay, Tommy Wiseau. I mean, I was also thinking, does it really matter if it's a film that stands in and of itself?
Does it stand alone?
I think it does. There are moments like, I still believe... If Ridley Scott did not want to make this a prequel to Alien, he would have changed the look of the aliens. He would have changed the template and the overall look of the film itself. Ridley Scott had a bigger budget. Technology's a lot better than it was in 1979, and I think he decided to reboot
it a little
bit.
Is that when the first one was made?
1979. Wow. I was 9 years old, sir. You were nothing.
Yep.
Literally.
Yep.
Now that you're a twinkle in Dad's eye. Not my dad, your dad's.
We don't have the same dad.
Shut up. So, yeah. And then, of course, James Cameron's was in 86, and then we won't talk about the rest. But yeah, it is a well-made spook house movie. I mean, it's aliens on a ship, not snakes on a plane. No, there's no Sam Jackson screaming.
Are we going to open some windows?
Yes. So, I mean... I enjoyed it. I was tense at times. There's three endings, which is my big issue. Of course, not nearly as many endings as Lord of the Rings. So it's not perfect, but I enjoyed it. And it was a film it takes its time. It is a slow-paced film, but it is not a slow film. And I think there's a difference on that. So that's worth renting. Go check it out.
This is pretty much
y'all
love it. No. So
I clicked the wrong one.
Y'all love it. So
y'all. Yep, there we go.
Okay. Also new on DVD this week, the Celebrity Okie musical known as Rock of Ages from the director of Hairspray. Yes, Julianne Hough, who's still fun to look at, and you have Tom Cruise, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Alec Baldwin, your guy Russell Brand, Paul Giamatti, and it's a musical about it's a jukebox musical, which means it has a thin storyline about the heavy metal clubs on the Sunset Strip in 1987. Thin backstage story. I understand they were trying to do the backstage story, and they capture that. And say what you will about the lunatic Tom Cruise, he is actually the best thing about this film. and it does embrace some of the silliness of some of these songs. But for me, the two, as somebody who grew up listening to some of this stuff, I know Long Haired Rock of the 80s is right up there with Kobe's World, like White Rock of the 70s.
But most of it, when you're talking about like
Poison and
the Skid
Row
celebrated in this movie, yes.
Yeah. Well, guess what? In 1980s, if you're doing a movie set in 1987, I don't want to hear music from 1988 to 1991, which as somebody who lived through these, I knew, and that really bothered me. Also, the fact that if you're doing a movie set on the Sunset Strip in 1987, nobody, I mean nobody, is playing Journey, Foreigner, or Night Ranger. Or REO Speedwagon. Just not happening. Can't do it. So, flawed, disappointing. Yeah. What was that one clip you just played?
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
It's not the worst. It's just really disappointing, not necessarily. Oh, John Cusack is Edgar Allan Poe in The Raven. They're trying to do it like Sherlock Holmes. A Cat in Paris is also new. Okay, old titles on Blu-ray. If you had a Blu-ray player, would you? Could you buy this? Should you buy this? E.T.
I don't really like E.T., but...
Boy, you're You call me cynical.
I can't get into it. I don't know.
I have a daughter, so therefore that's a yes. The 1986 Little Shop of Horrors.
Not seen it.
We enjoy it, even with the change to the ending. Red Dawn, not remake not needed. Not really worth revisiting, except anybody in the trivia world? Red Dawn was the first PG-13 film.
Really?
Really, yes. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Dial M for Murder? Yes, Alfred Hitchcock with Grace Kelly, Ray Milland.
Not the
perfect murder remake with Gwyneth Paltrow and Michael Douglas.
All right. I thought you were talking about something else.
Yeah, yeah. I know you were. The Hitchcock film Strangers on a Train?
Yes.
That's what we're checking out. Magical Mystery Tour, the Beatles.
No.
The Beatles self-indulgent movie there. The Great Mouse Detective. Kids Film Correspondent probably says yes. Ice Station Zebra. That's Rock Hudson, Ernest Borgnine, Jim Brown, and Patrick Bergoogan. So whatever happened to Baby Jane? I say yes.
That's
Betty Davis and Joan Crawford. Very campy, over-the-top, gothic horror melodrama. Very, very, okay, not so much horror. Dead Ringer with Betty Davis. Enemy Mine, that's the one with Lou Gossett as an alien and Dennis Quaid as a human stuck on a planet. They don't like each other, but they learn to get along.
Oh, come on.
They do get along. They do.
Humans and aliens?
Yeah.
No.
I know. And Find Me Guilty, directed by Sidney Lumet, featuring, believe it or not, an actual excellent and the best thing he's probably ever going to do performance of Vin Diesel. As a mobster who represents himself on trial. And, of course, it helps when you have the guy who directed Network, 12 Angry Men, The Verdict, and many other brilliant films working behind you. Okay, I want to move on to Into the Archives. This is, of course, where certain studios like Warner Brothers, Sony, Paramount, MGM, have movies that you can buy online, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Yes, only 15 to 20 if you're these studios. That's how they get you.
Who is it this week?
Well, this week I have a double feature. Because last week's film was the Gordon Parks Jr. directed Western Thomasine and Bushrod. That's the one with Max Julian, who starred and wrote the film. Of course, Max Julian, best known for The Mac. Well, there was a film that he originally created a character, and they made a sequel to it, and he had nothing to do with the sequel. This is 1975's Cleopatra Jones and the Casino of Gold. Max Julian, of course, is credited with the storyline for the original Cleopatra Jones, starring Tamara Dobson. The sequel from 1975 has Tamara Dobson going up against Stella Stevens, who plays she runs the Casino of Gold. She's a mobster and villainess who also like Shelley Winters in the original Cleopatra, little lesbian overtones, just a little bit. But the film is a little reminiscent of Enter the Dragon. It probably doesn't help that it's the same producers making this. But Dobson is more spy mode in this one as opposed to Pam Grier knockoff in the original Cleopatra Jones. She is in Hong Kong. She has a sidekick played by Ni Ten, who's very good in this. Good fight scenes. And they're out to infiltrate the casino and the drug company, the drug making that's under Stella Stevens' care. Oh, Norman Fell is in this as token white superior who never gets listened to by Cleopatra Jones. You know, that guy.
Yep.
That would be me. Film was directed by Charles Bale, who also gave us Black Samson, which I own on DVD, and The Gumball Rally. So, fun. Not as fun as the original Cleopatra Jones, but worth checking out. And since last week's film was directed by Gordon Parks Jr., I found the second film directed by Gordon Parks Sr., 1969 Warner Brothers drama The Learning Tree, which is about a young black kid, young African-American male, coming of age in Kansas in the 1920s. So he's dealing with his family, dealing with a crush, and also dealing with some small-town racism and a little bit of crime that he witnesses in small Kansas 1920s land.
1920s land?
1920s land. So... And before, this was before blaxploitation really kicked in. Well, it hadn't kicked in at all. Some would say it was across 110th Street. Some would say Shaft. Some would say Superfly. We'll work on the family tree for that.
Oh, that'd
another
be a
time.
Good one.
But
that'd be a good thing for the blog.
We'll have to work on that. But Gordon Parks Sr. would later direct, of course, speaking of which, in, his follow-up to The Learning Tree was Shaft in 1971. He'd also direct the sequel, Shaft's Big Score. Yes, Kobe, there are three Shaft films.
I didn't know this.
You need
this
to watch
to
all three.
This came last week.
Yep. Shaft. He did not direct Shaft in Africa, however. That was John Gillerman. The Super Cops, and then the 1976 biopic Lead Belly, which I hope becomes available into the archives sometime soon. Roger E. Mosley as musician Lead Belly. Okay, we move on and raise a glass, and I think Chris Lloyd has the intro.
Doing our the annual show of Dead People We Like.
there's a pretty big one this
week. We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
No, we don't. So we start with famed cinematographer Harris Savitas, who just died the other day at the age of 55. So really nice work. And what's cool is if you look, most of these films, a number of these films, I enjoyed very much. Some of these I actually own on DVD. So some of the films he was a cinematographer on: Heaven's Prisoners, David Fincher's film The Game, which is going to be out on Criterion very soon, The Yards, Finding Forrester, Jerry, Elephant, Birth, Last Days, Margot at the Wedding, American Gangster, Milk, Woody Allen's film Whatever Works, and Greenberg. Let's play a little bit of Larry Block. Larry Block was one of the ultimate that guys. First film I ever saw him in was Seamus with Burt Reynolds. He's famous for being the referee and slap shot for This Moment.
Three of you guys, you pull one thing, you're out of this game. And I run a clean game here. I have any trouble, I'll suspend. I'm looking at a thong!
I, of course, edited that. And, of course, we raise the glass to former Detroit Lions entity, Alex Karras. His best performance ever. Never got a nomination. This explains why the Lions have never been to the Super Bowl. Here's Alex Karras, simply as Mongo.
I'm leaving it. And name one of you friends and neighbors kind of gather around and... Holy
Hey, you can't park that animal over there. It's illegal.
Think of it, gentlemen. Hoof and mouth disease, a thing of the past.
Never mind that. Here comes Mungo.
Telegram for Mungo. Telegram for Mungo.
Sign, please. Thank you.
sounds like candy. Mongo only pawn in Game of Life.
Thank you, Alex. I also forgot, Harris Savitas also did Zodiac by David Fincher. Other films that he Alex Karras did, Mad Bull, When Time Ran Out, Nobody's Perfect, Victor Victoria, love him in that, Porky's, and really good in Against All Odds. Here's some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go to Heartland Film Festival. You're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI HD.